I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show Daily Journal, episode number 2. I am Chris Ann Hall, and you can always find us at chrisannhall.com, where we are always liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. Our Daily Journal, where we try to bring to you a daily dose of constitutional truth, principled application of the news and the things that you see covered in the media every single day. I want to introduce to you my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall.
Hello.
J.C., I am admittedly, although reluctantly based on my nature, I am admittedly becoming very overjoyed at the sight of Neil Gorsuch on the bench here in our Supreme Court. You know, I had my reservations in the beginning when he, at his Senate hearing, made the comment about how we cannot question federal judges, right?
Yeah.
But twice now, no, I stand corrected, three times now, Neil Gorsuch has been the lone guy out of 9 who has actually stood on true constitutional principle.
Yeah, well, I believe I said back then that I don't think you could learn anything from hearings about anyone because they say whatever they expect the people to hear. So while his response was troubling and you think, you know, why would you say something that you don't believe?
Right, right. That would be my problem.
Nevertheless, I don't know why anyone would watch hearings. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, they're not informative, and I don't think the people are, well, for lack of a better word, I don't think they're truthful.
You don't think that the nominees are truthful at the congressional at these nomination hearings?
No, I watched Mike Pompeo. I mean, there were things that he said that I know for a fact he doesn't believe. That I know, I mean, they basically had him denying things that are his core beliefs, you know, things that he believes in. He had them basically saying, you know, or they had him basically saying, no, I don't actually believe that. And as soon as they get through the hearing, then it's right back. And I don't mean something bad. I mean something I agreed with that Mike Pompeo believes, but they had him saying, no, I don't believe it. So I don't, yeah, those guys, I think somebody sort of gets them ready and says, you know, this is what kind of what you expect.
This is the gauntlet you must pass.
So say this, answer, say it like this, answer like this.
Yeah, I don't know if that would work out so well for me.
Right. You're right, but because you're going to be consistent to what you believe. The point is, the real, I think, stupidity of it, it's a dog and pony show because the people, ought to know what they're getting, right? Mm-hmm. You base who they are on their record. And so there's nothing, the Senate hearing you know, to me, maybe is to make a record for the American people. I mean, I really don't.
Again, you know, I agree.
I don't know what the purpose is.
I have no idea what the purpose is for these Senate hearings.
Yeah, you'll learn nothing.
Well, and they don't ask the right questions.
No, well, that's one reason you'll learn nothing. Because they're not going to ask the right questions in the first place, and the questions they do ask the people are not, they're not going to be answering directly necessarily.
Yeah.
They're going to say what they believe is expected to get them the job. And I honestly, I think the questioners are expecting that. I don't think they're really asking in the sense of tell us what you believe. What they're saying is we already know you believe this. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I'm putting you on notice. This is a shot across the bow. You know, we mm-hmm. find this unacceptable and you go down this course, you know, we're gonna make noise and whatever. So it's just really a lot of kabuki theater. So I don't think all these hearings, I don't think are relevant. So if you want to know about the nominee, like, you know, Trump is going to nominate a Supreme Court justice. So you need to go back to that guy, you know, whatever he is, federal judge or circuit judge, appeals court judge, whoever he is. You go back and look at his cases and what his opinions were, what his
right.
writings, what he said about those things. Because one thing you really need to understand as far as Supreme Court, and again, you're only going to get, you know, you're not going to get 100% guy because they all come up through law school. They're all taught precedent
federal
supremacy and all that sort of thing.
Judicial so supremacy.
It's going to be a rare thing that you get what you need in those respects. It mm-hmm. doesn't mean you won't get good decisions on some cases, but
I would suggest
it's a matter of how they
you
get
have
to, their
to go ahead and read their opinions.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you've got to go back and read their opinions. Now, I don't say you need to go through the whole court docket, but read the opinions that they write on the essential matters, like search and seizure and freedom of speech and freedom
yeah.
of press and that sort of thing. You know, there's always going to be that core, like you said, of the judicial supremacy. For example, in Gorsuch's dissenting opinions and opinions that he's been writing, you still see that element of the lower courts have to follow what we say.
Yeah.
And as we covered yesterday in the Daily Journal, that sort of ideal constitutional Supreme Court justice would know that no, the lower courts don't have to follow what you say if what you say is inconsistent with the Constitution. And definitely the state courts don't have to follow you because that's a matter of the Supremacy Clause. The Supremacy Clause says this Constitution and the laws of the United States which are made in pursuance thereof shall be the supreme law of the land and the state judges shall be bound thereby. Yeah. But if they are not made in pursuance to the Constitution, then the state judges are not bound thereby. And so that's something that we really need. And I would like to say I need the justices to understand that. But more than that, I think we need the people to understand that. Because remember, things don't change from the top down.
Right. And it's going to be a long-term thing. You have to, and I think we've seen a revival of state sovereignty consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need that. You're going to need that to move into some law schools.
Right.
That exist, or you're going to need to build some law schools that have that as part of their ideology.
I know where we can start.
Yeah.
We're going to put together the River School of Government. And, well, the River School of Government is already put together in Tampa, and we're praying about creating a pre-law program at the River School of Government that will eventually become another law school like you can find at Liberty University that sticks to Constitution and principle rather than precedent. I would imagine, you know, you still have to teach a certain amount of precedent because that's the way the cogs function in the machine.
Yeah, but you can teach it in light of,
right.
you know, the first principles. But even short of that, you know, people are beginning to teach these principles in their mm-hmm. school, homeschools,
yeah.
College students are getting it. You have so many young college organizations that are getting in there.
Well, you know, we've been doing this tour with the 37 member youth group this week in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And I didn't ask you this off the air, but how has that been for you to to watch the faces and, if you will, the minds of these young people mm-hmm. as we're teaching them these essential principles and elements of history that they've never heard before.
Yeah,
how's that hit you?
Some of them are taking notes. I mean, they're literally, if I'm using that word right, they're writing, you know, writing notes down and things.
With their thumbs and their...
Yeah, but I several, a good handful, you know how I am. It's, for me, it's relational, you know, it's relationship type context. So I've talked a ton of them one-on-one to talk about these things.
Yeah, so I've been the same way, and I think that's why the teaching element of what we do is what keeps me going, because watching, even, I mean, it's the young people because they're the future, but even adults of all ages, watching the light bulbs go on is what really gets me going.
Well, you hear them as I'm speaking with them, then, you know, you hear them respond, and so many, you know, I didn't know that, and you learn these things, and we're giving them, and it's not just, you know, here's what I believe, here's what Chris Ann believes. We're giving them source. We're giving them first source information and saying, like, we took the tour of Ford Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so there was a lot of talk about Lincoln and you know, the things that he believed and what he said. And so it wasn't, you know, here's what I think of Lincoln. I was talking to the one guy. I said, hey, here's Lincoln's first inaugural address. And, you know, we looked at some of the things in there that are interesting in light of history and in light of what we teach.
Yeah, that first inaugural address that is literally scrapped out of history. I mean, we went to the Washington Monument one time, and there was a book about memorable speeches of Lincoln.
What was, what do they call it, an anthology.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be an anthology. Which an anthology is essentially the collection of all that they've done sort of chronologically, and that one was missing.
The first inaugural address is conspicuously gone.
Because it contains some things that don't neatly fit into a sort of single line narrative. There's a lot more complexity.
The presentation of Lincoln that the American people are fed to believe.
There's a lot more complexity and a lot more facets to that thing, and some things, some positions that he had that don't line up with the popular narrative. You know, and that's mm-hmm. true of every founder and all of these issues. We try to, we simplify complex issues, create some narrative, some story, and try to push that. And then the other thing we do is we snatch it out of its own historical context and try to jam it in modern day terms when things, you know, that was not the thought process and things didn't happen that way. So you lose different considerations when you do that.
Okay, so stick with us with a break. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. I do want to remind you that the Daily Journal is just your daily dose, a daily dose of Constitution and principled truth in light of the fake news that you find in media today. We still have the Chris Ann Hall Weekly Show that comes for 2 hours every Saturday, dealing with the tough issues, dealing with the intense studies, and wrapping up the week in truth. And I started off today's show, obviously, with my husband and co-host JC Hall, and we started off where I was really, really pleased with Neil Gorsuch. And I want to talk today about a case that Neil Gorsuch was once again the lone guy.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, we get a good history lesson, not simply from Gorsuch, but from some of the other justices that were remarking in the case and getting the history kind of a little bit wrong. So we get an opportunity to supplement that, right? So I'm not being a hater. We're not hating. We're just supplementing with truth in light of their error. And this case is called Carpenter v. U.S. Now, the background in this case, this is a search and seizure case on the federal government, so it falls under the Fourth Amendment. And in this case specifically, what has happened is Carpenter is accused of a series of robberies. And in order to indict him, in order to get his conviction, most literally, the law enforcement gets phone records from his cell phone provider, not phone calls, but his location of his cell phone at any given point from a cell tower. And so they were able to bring in these phone records that identified the cell tower position of his cell phone to make a correlation of this is where Mr. Carpenter was, this is where the robberies were. So since we know he was in the area at the same time of the robberies, we know he's guilty, this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the argument is they never got a warrant to get those cell phone records. You see, because right now the Supreme Court believes that cell phone records are not your property.
Right.
They belong to the cell phone company,
mm-hmm.
which makes them third party owned. And this is the crazy thing. According to the Supreme Court, the Fourth Amendment, which reads, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. No warrant shall issue, but based upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized, only protects the property that you own." Okay? If your property is in the hands of a third party, it doesn't protect you.
According to the Supreme Court.
According to the Supreme Court. Okay? So if you don't own the property and it's not in your possession, then the Fourth Amendment doesn't protect that particular property.
Or if you do own the property.
Well, there are certain circumstances, yes, where if you do own the property, like your bank records, right? You obviously own the money in your bank, or at least you think you do.
So Gorsuch basically said, you guys are nuts.
Yeah, so, and here's the thing that I wanted to just get into a sort of really intense kind of property lesson because of some things that I was really, really enlightened, not simply by Gorsuch's opinion, but by Thomas's dissenting opinion. Oh, well, actually, Thomas concurring and dissenting at the same time.
I'm going to just be honest with you. The fact that we got to dig deep through history to really determine that anything and everything somebody has about me,
you can just
have access to.
Right.
And I have no say-so in it.
Yeah.
The fact that we have to dig and reason, I mean, come on. You know, that's the kind of lunacy that goes on in the court.
Right, because there is no ludicrous common sense.
Yeah,
so you remember when I teach about the Fourth Amendment class that I teach, and I teach about property and how the Supreme Court defines, because it says, shall be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. Well, they recognize you're not free from all searches and seizures, just unreasonable ones.
Yeah.
And it's that definition of reasonableness that the Supreme Court has completely made up that makes the whole thing ridiculous. And when we get back from the break, I want to explain to everybody where that definition actually came from.
I'm a long, long way from my home, and I'm going to change all the things I find strange, for I am not one man alone.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal, your daily dose of truth, history, and Constitution. And we're talking about Carpenter v. U.S. We're talking about how, once again, Neil Gorsuch was the lone wolf. And I have with me my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall. Now, we the Supreme Court has defined this definition of reasonableness on a reasonable search and seizure. And literally, their definition is what someone might find reasonable under reasonable circumstances. That is the definition of reasonableness. Listen to what Thomas says about how that definition came to be in the Supreme Court, the adopted high court's definition of reasonableness. He says, and I quote, the lawyer in this there was a Supreme Court case called that we refer to called Katz, K-A-T-Z. And he says, the lawyer in Katz, a recent law school graduate, apparently had an epiphany while preparing for oral argument in Katz v. U.S. He conjectured, like the reasonable person test from his tort class, that the Fourth Amendment should turn on whether a reasonable person could have expected his communication to be private. After some questioning from the justices, the lawyer conceded that his test should also require individuals to subjectively expect privacy, and with that modification, Justice Harlan, who wrote the opinion, seemed to accept the lawyer's test almost verbatim in concurrence.
Okay, I'm not sure I heard you right. Did you say my man had a vision? And that's how he came up with the legal standard?
The word was epiphany.
Okay.
He had an epiphany. And
so he woke up, smoked some weed, and said, hey, whoa, I'm seeing things.
He woke up and said, reasonable. Reasonable means what a reasonable person would find reasonable under reasonable circumstances.
Come on.
You got to be smoking something to come up with that, right?
You fired.
Right.
On the spot.
Here's the thing.
Go get a mental health examination.
The justice who wrote the opinion in Katz v. U.S. said, oh, that's brilliant. We're going to use that from now on.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be the standard.
Never thought of that.
Right? So then Thomas.
Like some Willy Wonka chocolate factory tunnel ride. Just start seeing things.
Right.
That's great. That's great legal doctrine.
And now, all of a sudden, what do we have? We have the Supreme Court, the ultimate arbiter of Constitution and truth, making their definitions from brand new lawyer epiphanies and oral arguments. How crazy is that? Well, this is what I wanted to get to. And Thomas goes on in his opinion version to try to define the fact that persons, houses, papers, and effects doesn't mean your cell phone records. So Thomas is under the impression that effects does not mean cell phone records, because when the founders wrote the Fourth Amendment, they only meant physical property.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And what's crazy is, he goes on to talk about the writs of assistance, and he gets James Otis Jr.'s name wrong. He calls him John Otis, who argued the famous writs of assistance case, contended that writs violated the fundamental principle of law, and that Otis tied this, listen to this, that Otis tied this specifically seizure of stuff in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is Clarence Thomas saying persons, houses, papers, and effects by original intent only applies to your physical stuff in your house.
Mm-hmm.
How alarming is that? I mean, he goes on then even to recommend that Madison, one of the changes Madison's draft of the Fourth Amendment was to change the words other property to effects. Now, for me, that is a broadening of the term.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, no, that is a narrowing of the term.
So what does it mean?
Right. So what it means is what James Madison, who was the author of this text, advising the change of this text to effects, right? Would mean property to mean. And what's crazy is, I guess Thomas has never read Madison's essay on property. Because Madison clearly says, This term property in its particular application means that dominion which one man claims and exercises over the external things of the world in exclusion to every other individual. Now, this falls under Thomas's definition of property. Mm-hmm. But Madison goes on to say, in its larger and juster meaning, it embraces everything to which a man may attach a value and have a right, and which leaves to everyone else the like advantage. That's what effects is. Everything. Listen to what he says. In the former sense, a man's land, merchandise, or money is called his property. In the latter sense, a man has a property in his opinions and the free communication of them. Your emails are your property.
Right.
He says he has a property of particular value in his religious opinions and in the profession and practice dictated them. He has a property very dear to him in the safety and liberty of his person. He has an equal property in the free use of his faculties and the free choice of objects on which to employ them. In a word, he says, a man is said to have a right to his property. He may equally be said to have a property in his rights. This is the man who penned the words of the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects from unreasonable searches and seizures.
Yeah, you would think he'd have some authority and credibility in explaining what it means.
So by this definition, which, by the way, doesn't take a PhD to get a hold of. It's right there on the internet. Google, Madison, property. It's right there. It was written as an instructive essay.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that, you know, you get a sense as you read various opinions, successive opinions of the justices, you get a sense of their sort of judicial personality. So Clarence Thomas is, for the most part, usually on target. But what you discover is they have areas, right? Mm-hmm. And some of these guys are more nationalistic. So mm-hmm. when you start talking about law enforcement and that sort of thing, then all of a sudden opinions that would follow one line elsewhere, when law enforcement comes in the picture, they're ready to ease, you know, the restrictions and sort of whittle away your rights so that we can ensure law enforcement can do their job.
And that's basically what the other justices, the eight other justices, save Gorsuch, said.
Yeah.
So we're going to carve out an exception mm-hmm. for law enforcement.
Yep.
Right?
Always.
So five justices, which we would normally term the liberal justices, actually overturned the case and said, no, these are his personal effects. There needed to be a search.
Yeah.
But then they carved out a very small exception so that they didn't overturn the general exception that law enforcement does not have to have a warrant to get stuff that is held by a third party that belongs to you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Thomas's dissent was he was upset that they overturned it at all. Basically what Thomas says is where you stand on the street is not your property.
Yeah.
And your cell phone, which pings wherever you are, is not your property. So in order for somebody to know where you're standing, if they're not watching you,
yeah.
they don't need a warrant for that.
Right. It belongs to AT&T. It belongs to the bank.
No. Basically, the bottom line was you're making law enforcement too difficult. That was the bottom
right.
line.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the whole point of the Fourth Amendment.
Exactly.
That was the whole point of the Fourth Amendment, right. to make it difficult.
Yeah.
Because the argument and
the whole context was what was essentially law enforcement, the troops coming
right.
into your home and doing, you know, whatever they wanted.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly what Thomas thought that they were searching and seizing, because obviously he hasn't seen the full course history there either, because they weren't searching and seizing for papers and linen, lumber, sugar, tea, paper, and ink. You know, the bottom line is they searched and seized whatever they wanted, including our wives and daughters. So I don't know. There's just so much to this. And even
Gorsuch basically said, you guys are all crazy because the whole foundation of how you reason this out is
right.
ludicrous in the first place.
So here's what happens. The liberals who don't read this look at this and say, oh, Gorsuch was against our rights. No, no, no. It was the exact opposite. He was the only one standing
only one
for
right.
them, right?
Yeah.
So Thomas talks about James Otis Jr., although he calls him John Otis. It's actually James Otis Jr. And it's actually James Otis Jr. who came under attack by the citizens for taking the stand against these unlawful searches and seizures. And he said this. He said, I have nothing to hide, but I have everything to preserve. Mm-hmm. Because the argument was, why are you opposed
to
these? What do you have to hide? Why wouldn't you want the bank? I mean, seriously, if you're running your banking, you know, on the up and up, if you're not trying to hide anything, why wouldn't it be okay for the government to have your bank records? Mm-hmm. Right? Why wouldn't that be okay? I mean, the fact that you object, the fact that you run, the fact that you won't let me search your trunk, the fact that you won't let me search your cell phone proves that you must be guilty of something. Isn't that what Pam Bondi said, right?
Yeah, see, that gives dominion, the dominion to the king, right, to the government.
Right.
In our system, we flip that. That's the whole point.
Right.
Right, what makes America different. I'm the sovereign.
Right.
I'm king in
right.
this system. So in their reasoning, it's automatically, it's the government automatically has these rights. And
right.
if you don't have a good reason, you know, to counter that, then you lose. That's not how our system works. It's the other way around.
Let me show you.
You can't get my stuff unless I say you can get my stuff, or it's authorized by what
by due process.
The rules we've set.
Due process,
exactly.
Right? So when we come back from the break, I want to talk to you about Neil Gorsuch and the amazing dissent in this case, Carpenter v. U.S., and what he actually said. We read this together, and it was just amazing to us how the plain speak and logic this man uses.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Chris Ann Hall Daily Show. And I just want to wrap up. I want to talk to you about Neil Gorsuch and what amazing things that he said in this Carpenter v. U.S. Case. He said, and I'm quoting, in the late 1960s, this court suggested for the first time that a search triggering the Fourth Amendment occurs when a government violates a, quote, expectation of privacy that, quote, society is prepared to recognize as reasonable. I can sort of hear Gorsuch, you know, saying that in kind of sarcasm. He says, then in a pair of decisions in the 70s, applying that test, the court held that a reasonable expectation of privacy doesn't attach to information shared to third parties. By these steps, he says, the court came to conclude that the Constitution does nothing to limit investigators from searching your records you've entrusted to your bank, accountant, or maybe even your doctor. He says, what's left of the Fourth Amendment?
Exactly.
I mean, that's what we've been saying for a long time. When the court, a division of the government, can take I'm a cooker. I prepare food. So I just imagine this lemon baller, this thing that just carves out big chunks and circles out of the Fourth Amendment,
until
leaving nothing
left,
is left.
But a husk.
And he says, what is left of the Fourth Amendment? He says, today we use the internet to do most everything. Smartphones make it easy to keep a calendar, correspond with friends, make calls, conduct banking, even watch the game. Countless internet companies maintain records about us, increasingly for us. Even our most private documents, those that in other eras we would have locked safely in a desk drawer or destroyed, now reside on third-party servers. What's left of the Fourth Amendment?
Right.
And he goes on, and I really want to encourage you to pick up this case, Carpenter v. U.S., and just, you can skip everything in the entire thing. Just go straight to Gorsuch's dissent. It's the last written part of the opinion. And he just lays out the fact, number one, this is the most amazing thing. This Supreme Court Justice Gorsuch says, you know what we need to do? We need to scrap every bit of precedent that we've established in these Fourth Amendment cases since 1960.
And get back,
to the Constitution. And get back to the principles of property ownership. I bet Gorsuch has read Madison's property definition.
Wasn't there something in the other, with the nut jobs, that I think it was Kagan was saying how that the Constitution was a hindrance? Like, we should...
Oh, no. Really, that's another case we're going to talk about this week.
We should avoid the Constitution in deciding these things. It really messes stuff up.
Yeah.
That was kind of the gist of what you said.
That's the case with the union dues.
She's a loon. She's an absolute loon.
She is loon. She is a loon. And here's the thing. You know, everybody's talking about how, you know, these justices need to have this background and blah, blah, blah. Kagan has no background. Kagan was never a federal judge. She never really did anything in the federal court system except for work for Barack Obama. She was the dean of Harvard Law. Mm. And that was the best that she did.
That ought to be disqualifying, right?
Well, as dean of Harvard Law, she removed constitutional law from the graduating requirement for law students at Harvard Law and requires them now to take international law and comparative law, which is another form of international law. Removing the basic remnants of constitutional study from the required curriculum of Harvard Law School graduates. Maybe that's why Harvard, do you remember the article that we read not too long ago about how the Harvard graduates said that while they were in law school, they laughed at the language of the Second Amendment because it was so ridiculously, childishly written or something like that?
Mm.
Maybe that's because, they don't have to have constitutional law anymore. But remember, constitutional law is not the Constitution anyway, so maybe we're better off having Harvard lawyers know nothing about precedent that overturns the Constitution. He's sitting here shaking his head. He can't believe this.
Where I'm from, they say you're crippled too high for crutches to make that work. I don't know. That's a bunch of brainwashed nut jobs. I can't even wrap my brain around that.
So Gorsuch asks these questions. Can the government demand a copy of all your emails from Google or Microsoft without implementing or implicating the Fourth Amendment? Can it secure your DNA from 23andMe without a warrant or probable cause? These are the kind of things that we as Americans now need to address. And these are the things that the Fourth Amendment was designed to protect. And this is what our courts should be doing. Hope you join us again tomorrow. God bless. See you tomorrow.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist. Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist. Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist. Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
What will our children say? Let them say of me, I was one who believed in sharing the blessings I received.